You are listening to 90.1 FM KKFI Kansas City Community Radio. Stay tuned for the 10th Voice. The views and opinions of this program are those of its host and guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of 90.1 FM KKFI, Midcoast Radio Project, or its staff and volunteers.
This is The 10th Voice, Kansas City's gay and lesbian radio magazine. The 10th Voice, because you refuse to be silent.
And good afternoon, Kansas City. I'm Pierce Patterson, and this is The 10th Voice, the community calendar events news information show here in Kansas City, GLBT, of course, and we are joined in studio today. I'm very excited. We've got the entire crew here today. We have Sandra Mead to do the news. We have Brent Husher to do the 10th Voice calendar. We have guests, and I'm going to tell you who they are because I want you to stay tuned for this show because this is an amazing show. We're going to have the 10th Voice News, of course, with Sandra Mead. We will then follow with the KC legal team of Elizabeth Hodges and Jake McMillian, who's going to be here to tell us what's been going on in the LGBT legal world here, local, regional, national, international. And most exciting, we have Dr. Daryl Ray, who was on Sandra Mead's show. And he is going to be talking about sex and God. And that's going to be an extraordinary discussion. That'll be at the second half of the hour. And, of course, Brent Husher will bring us the 10th Voice community calendar. But first, the 10th Voice News.
Thank you, Brent. Let's start out in Ecuador. 17 captives were freed from a gay addiction torture clinic on Thursday. The patients, including a 15-year-old, were found barely living in inhumane conditions, with some reported that they were being electrocuted to cure them. Authorities arrested seven people following a dawn raid on the Union and Hope Clinic in Pusuli, a clinic that claimed to be treating drug and alcohol problems. The captives were taken to a hospital for recovery. Authorities found the unlicensed clinic while searching for 22-year-old gay student David Romo, who disappeared on May 16th. Police suspect that he was held at the Union and Hope Clinic before he was moved on. In New Mexico, the New Mexico State Insurance Superintendent John Franchini announced Wednesday that insurance companies doing business in that state must offer the same discounts to married same-sex couples with valid marriage licenses as they do opposite-sex couples. In making his decision, Franchini cited an equal rights provision in the New Mexico State Constitution and also the recent Supreme Court ruling that a photography business that had refused to photograph a same-sex couple ceremony had illegally discriminated against them. The New Mexico Supreme Court is expected to release its ruling on whether same-sex marriage is legal in that state any day now. In Detroit, General Motors announced on Wednesday that they will now honor the marriage certificates of all gay employees, no matter which state they reside in. In practical terms, that means gay employees will no longer face a tax penalty of $1,000 to obtain health care for their same-sex partners. The new policy will also make it possible for same-sex partners to inherit pension benefits if a spouse dies. In Idaho, four Idaho couples are suing that state in federal court to challenge laws banning same-sex marriage and denying recognition to same-sex couples who married in other states. Their lawsuit is the first challenge to Idaho's constitutional ban of same-sex marriage since the U.S. Supreme Court decisions on DOMA and Prop 8 in June. The women, who are represented by two local attorneys and the National Center for Lesbian Rights, contend that Idaho's laws violate the U.S. Constitution's guarantees of equal protection and due process. The state has not yet responded to that lawsuit. And in Hawaii, the Hawaii House lawmakers worked late until last night. It was very late last night before taking their third and final vote on a bill to legalize gay marriage on the islands. The measure passed by a 30-19 vote. The bill will now move back to the Senate since the House version contains amendments to the original version previously approved by the upper chamber. If passed by the Senate and signed by the governor, same-sex marriages will begin December 2nd in Hawaii. In Washington, in a historic vote on Thursday, the U.S. Senate approved an LGBT Inclusive Employment Non-Discrimination Act, ENDA, About time. Legislation that outlaws workplace discrimination against gay, bisexual, and transgender Americans. The final vote in favor of ENDA was 64-32, with a yes vote including 54 Democrats and 10 Republicans. Republican Senator John McCain and Republican Senator Orrin Hatch previously opposed a similar bill 17 years ago, but voted for it this time. However, despite bipartisan support in the Senate, the Republican-led House is unlikely to even vote on the legislation. If the House fails to act on the bill, gay rights advocates are likely to press Obama to act unilaterally and sign an executive order banning LGBT workplace discrimination by federal contractors. In Springfield, Illinois, Governor Pat Quinn says he's planning to sign same-sex marriage legislation on November 20th in Chicago. The legislature passed the measure on Tuesday. Quinn is a longtime same-sex marriage supporter. The Chicago Democrat says he's looking forward to signing the legislation and celebrating a big step forward with the people of Illinois. After Quinn signs the legislation, Illinois will join 14 other states and the District of Columbia that have legalized same-sex marriage. And in Virginia, everybody was waiting for the outcome of this election. In Tuesday's election for the Virginia governor, Democrat Terry McAuliffe defeated conservative anti-gay Republican Ken Cuccinelli by a narrower margin than anticipated. The newly elected governor said on Wednesday that one of his very first official acts when he takes office will be to reinstate former Governor Tim Kaine's order to end discrimination against LGBT individuals in state government. In the race for lieutenant governor in that state, Democrat State Senator Ralph Northam defeated vehemently anti-gay minister and Republican E.W. Jackson. And in New Jersey, a federal judge on Friday upheld a New Jersey law barring therapists from trying to turn gay youth straight by subjecting them to gay conversion therapy. Judge Freda Wolfson said in the ruling that the law does not violate free speech or religious protection. The lawsuit had been filed by a New Jersey couple who said the ban violated their right to seek anti-gay conversion therapy for their 15-year-old son. And that's a wrap. That's all for the news I've got today. Stay tuned, though. A lot of those things that I just briefly mentioned are going to be discussed in detail by the highly qualified and eminent KC legal team. So please stay tuned. And that's all for me. Over to you, Brent.
Thank you, Sandra. And we are back, and I am Pierce Patterson here with the 10th Voice in Kansas City, and we are talking about legal issues today. With the KC Legal Team, we have Jake with us, and we have Elizabeth.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Tell us, what is shaking out there?
There's no words for what's happened over the last few weeks. I told Jake before we came in here that gay marriage is kind of like a viral video. Everybody just wants to watch it and have it and be part of it.
Perfect analogy.
Okay, so let's start abroad. Just a brief story from the European Union, and they're granting asylum for LGBT refugees from anti-gay nations. So we've heard about Sierra Leone, we've heard about Uganda, Senegal, where they imprison gay citizens and even fear of death. So the EU court has actually allowed nations in the EU to accept LGBT citizens seeking asylum. So that's a huge situation, given what's going on in some African countries over there, for the people there to be able to come over and have a safe place to live.
Right.
So, okay, now, ENDA.
ENDA.
How about there, Jake?
That look of
ENDA stands for the Employment Non-Discrimination Act. It is an act that's been proposed in Congress a number of times over the past 10 years or so. And the kind of skin and bones of the act is that it would require, or it would disallow any organization from firing their employees because they identify as LGBT or are perceived to be LGBT. And really, in theory, someone could be fired from their job just because their boss thinks that they are gay. And ENDA passed the United States Senate earlier this week, which is a huge victory. It took a 60-vote threshold, correct?
Yeah, 64-32.
A 60-vote threshold And there was a lot of talk at one point that we wouldn't meet that threshold, but there was bipartisan support, not as much as what we would like to see. You know, I think as all kind of civil rights matters, we wish that we could be in agreement that people deserve protection in the workforce. However, that kind of unanimity isn't always present like we want it to be, but we had almost complete Democratic support.
Total
Democratic support in, what, six? Or nine?
Yeah.
Nine Republican senators that came out in support, and Elizabeth has a list of them.
Yeah, just by way of reference, the last time the full Senate heard INDA was 1996, and it failed 49 to 50, and it was voted on as part of the DOMA, Defense of Marriage Act, that then subsequently passed. So a lot of movement in the last 50 or 15 years. So it passed 64 to 32, and it's kind of a resounding passage, I think. It'll never be introduced in the House, which is another issue we'll talk about. But President Obama is supportive of it. He's asked the House to bring it for a vote, and we'll see what happens with Boehner. Right now, looks like it's going to stall.
Right. So now that it's left the Senate, it goes right back to the House for House approval. And the problem is that Speaker Boehner has really no interest. It does not fit in with his political agenda, so he won't even bring it to a vote. And even if it did get brought to a vote, I'm not terribly confident that it would pass the House. But even just as a rhetorical matter, it's kind of perplexing to me that it wouldn't be brought to a vote.
And Boehner's on the record as saying he doesn't believe it's necessary because he believes that sexual orientation is already protected under the law, which is an odd stance considering it's not.
Well, it's obviously not true. And one thing that Elizabeth and I talked about earlier today was the status of the medical field. One in six hospitals in America are run by the Catholic Church. And if you're crazy if you think that those one in six hospitals have legal protections for same-sex couples or LGBT people or anything like that. They obviously won't. So that's just an obvious example of why INDA is necessary.
So timeline of its passage, do you think it will occur a year, 2 years?
I mean, we'll see how the midterms go next year. I mean, I think if things keep going the way they're going, if we have another potential shutdown, I think that's only more ammunition for the Democrats to push along to get new faces in the Congress. But
but let's be honest, we still haven't passed the Fair Pay Act for women, so
it could be a while.
It could be a while.
Yeah.
And who in their right mind doesn't support the Fair Pay Act, right? But it's still stalled in the House.
And this is extremely important legislation. I mean, we have to have protection for sexual orientation and gender identity just at its most basic level. Someone can look at an employee, say, I think you're gay. You might be gay. I don't like gay people. You're fired. And there's no recourse for those people that happens to. And it does happen. Even in my practice, I get calls for it, I would guess, on a weekly or every other weekly basis where it happens.
Do local laws offer any protection in those circumstances? Like Kansas City's anti-discrimination ordinance, but it doesn't take care of a federal regulation would trump a local.
Right.
So there are some, I'm sure plenty of cities. Lawrence,
locals.
Kansas is one of them that has very strong legislation citywide that protects LGBT people. But
it doesn't
kind
really
of few and far between.
It's kind of just token law, kind of. We support you, yeah, but in the long run, there's really not the federal support that we need. So the list of GOP senators that voted for it, so if anybody wants to call and give a thumbs up to these senators.
Or a thumbs down to the ones that didn't.
And then there's that. Senator Mark Kirk from Illinois, Susan Collins from Maine, Kelly Ayotte from New Hampshire, Jeff Flake from Arizona, Orrin Hatch from Utah, Dean Heller from Nevada, Pat Toomey from Pennsylvania, Rob Portman from Ohio, Lisa Murkowski from Alaska, and John McCain from Arizona. So I think John McCain's a huge get.
And that's surprising.
I know, and I think his family may have had something
to
do with that.
His wife might be withholding something. I'm not going to say what, but she's withholding something from him.
Well, this is the Sex and God edition here, so.
Just saying.
Just saying.
And less on the legal side, but just a little tidbit, GM is now recognizing gay marriages for purposes of benefits for their employees. So that's a big deal.
Go General Motors.
Exactly. Okay, so let's begin the marriage talk. The marriage
let's
walk.
Let's talk about marriage.
Where do we want to start?
Do you want to start? Illinois? Let's start in Illinois.
Let's
Illinois, I think, as a kind of cultural matter, Illinois is a really big deal because, well, for those of you who didn't know, Illinois passed a resolution through their House of Representatives affirming same-sex marriage in that state. It'll go back to the Senate, where it will pass resoundingly, and the governor is ready to sign it. It's culturally important because 5% of the U.S. population lives in Illinois. 12.5 million people live there. So that's 12.5 million people that live in a place that affirms same-sex marriages. So just as a cultural matter, that's a big deal. Not to say that, you know, marriage in Kansas doesn't matter, but there are just significantly fewer people here.
Okay, and he's going to sign that November 20th.
November
20th. In Chicago. Big day for them. And then we have Arkansas. Arkansas, of all states, right?
Arkansas.
I know.
We're
your eyes
surrounded.
Just got as big as saucers.
We are surrounded.
So the Attorney General there approved wording for a marriage referendum. There's actually a constitutional ban. So they're going at it from both ways. They're trying to get it to a vote, popular vote. But there's also a couple of suits in Arkansas to try and get rid of the ban. But this is all huge news. If we can do it by popular vote and beat the courts and the judicial system, hey, and we always have the back of the judicial system. So then there's that. So Hawaii. Huge passage today.
Huge passage like 4 hours ago. The Hawaii House of Representatives passed their marriage bill. It's kind of like a race between all of these different states on who's going to be number 15, the 15th state in the United States to affirm marriage equality. And I will say on the air, the moment that Hawaii becomes has marriage equality, like the first man who proposes to me and decides that he will take me to Hawaii, we're going.
On the record.
Marry me in Hawaii and I'm there.
That's really, really easy. Jeez Louise.
The phone lines are lighting up.
Look at that one call. They
hung up.
There's an interesting twist in Hawaii with a representative there named Joe Jordan. And just to put this out there, is kind of a very neutral subject. She voted against marriage equality, even though she is an out lesbian. So an interesting twist.
Very.
Yeah. She says that she listened to hours and hours of testimony, and she's worried about the religious exemptions and how religion will be treated if this goes into play. And she voted against it because she felt that that was what her constituents wanted. It's the first time it's ever happened in the history of these types of votes.
And right-wing pundits are jumping all over it, and maybe rightfully so. It's certainly surprising, and it's certainly newsworthy, and the angle that's going to be taken is that, you know, there's this kind of disparate understanding of what is best for the country, even among gay and lesbian people, which is not really true. She's certainly an outlier. But I do think it's really important to have it said that it is entirely possible to square your religious beliefs about any number of different topics with the idea of civil marriage equality for same-sex couples. Like, you can easily do that just by keeping in mind that marriage in America is a civil contract that has really nothing to do with your church. Your church will, as it always has been done and has been done in every country that recognizes same-sex marriage, your church will be able to keep its traditions as
alive and well.
Now. Alive,
yeah, but,
and well.
But I know one of her arguments, I can hear it, is that heterosexuals will spontaneously combust and their marriages
their
heads will explode if it gets passed.
And the religious argument, I just have difficulty with it because we already protect religious freedom.
Right.
It's very clear. It's in the Constitution. We allow you to practice your religion. So the idea that we now have to pass marriage equality laws with another exemption in them for religious practices is just beyond me. It's already protected. We don't need to be redundant about it.
Right.
So just that's an interesting twist in Hawaii, even though it did pass.
Yeah.
It did pass. So we're going. Mm-hmm. It's going back to the Senate. And the governor there will sign it. He said he'll sign it. So soon enough, Hawaii will be there. Okay, and then Idaho.
I'll let you go on Idaho.
I mean, who saw this one coming? NCLR has filed a lawsuit against the state there to recognize same-sex marriage, and NCLR is National Center for Lesbian Rights. And four same-sex couples and their instructors, their teachers of deaf children, military veterans, all different walks of life, and three of the couples, interestingly enough, are raising children together, which I think is I think that helps our cause when you come at it from the kid's point of view. So we'll see how that develops, but they're hot on the trail as well. It's just one domino after another. And that's kind of how you felt about Illinois, because that is next to Minnesota, which is next to Wisconsin.
Right, so there are all these states that are kind of that are toying with the idea or making their own moves towards marriage equality. Wisconsin is a big one. Wisconsin has an organization called Equality Wisconsin, which is incredibly active legislative policy group. They do any number of different things for the LGBT community, but in particular, their focus is on marriage. And they were the driving force that got Senator Tammy Baldwin to the Senate to be the first openly lesbian senator in American history. So they have a lot of sway, and I'm just thinking in terms of Illinois being like right next door to Wisconsin, it kind of just bleeds over. And same with states like Colorado, where, 18 months ago, Colorado passed their civil unions laws. And what we've seen historically is that states that pass civil union laws subsequently pass laws regarding marriage, or within the judicial process, which happens more frequently, just as a matter of equal protection. These state judiciaries, these state Supreme Courts, look at their civil union statutes and say, but there is something obviously not equal. Like, a civil union is obviously not the same thing as a marriage. And for that reason alone, we are not going to allow civil unions, but instead we are going to require marriage equality.
So tell us, we have time for one more legal tidbit. Do you have any other legal?
Just one small one. I don't know if everyone heard it from Kansas. The boy that carried a purse to school, the Vera Bradley purse to school. It's not really a legal story, but I think we should just call attention to it. He's 13 years old. He was suspended from his school for carrying a purse, and it was a Vera Bradley purse. And he actually was told by the principal to stop carrying it. He refused and was then suspended.
And I'll be the first to tell you, like, the Vera Bradley bag, like, it's kind of small. Like, I can't fit all my stuff in it, and, like, the patterns never work for me.
You tried.
Like, the pattern itself never works for me either. But I think what's so funny, like, a lot of parents who are failing to support this poor kid, they're saying, oh, well, there's a policy at the school that says that you can't carry a bag anywhere, which might be true. The extent to which that's true doesn't really matter if it's not being applied evenly.
Right.
If you're going to let girls, notwithstanding that school policy, if you're going to let them carry their bags in, it's perplexing to me that you would not allow this boy who's really, like, not causing any trouble other than
And he's pretty cute. He's just a cute kid.
Oh, it's like, you know, that awkward gay middle schooler stage.
Tell us about it, Jake.
We've all been there. I went to Catholic school, so I never...
No purses.
I didn't get to wear
no
a purse. Like, yeah.
Or a merce.
Right, the merce, the man purse.
Satchels. I've been told they're called satchels.
Of course.
And half of Europe is, like, looking at us like we're crazy because, like, everyone wears a man purse in Europe.
Yeah.
But
yeah, his mom has said that there's no provision in the handbook or anything, and the school hasn't responded to any requests for anything, which seems
Anderson
a little...
County, like, you know, it's another small community, so...
Just Kansas.
Kansas.
We still have work to do.
Oh, my gosh. We still have work to do, and we will always have legal stuff coming up and needing to be reported and brought to the attention of our listeners. So, Jake, Elizabeth, thank you again for coming in and reporting the legal news from the Casey Legal standpoint.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Support for KKFI provided by Santora's Pizza, 3834 Main, Kansas City, Missouri. Open daily with late-night delivery featuring pizza by the slice, pizza pies, pasta, and sandwiches. Pick up or delivery at 816-756-1616.
I'll do you sexual favors, but I'm not into those sexual flavors. Sometimes I wish I was braver. I'm vanilla, I'm vanilla. I know about ropes and whips, handcuffs and nipple clips. That's something I'm gonna skip. I'm vanilla, I'm vanilla. If I really get into you, maybe I'll sing a
And we are back, and I'm Pierce Patterson. Of course, this is the second half of the 10th Voice, Kansas City's gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender news program. And I'm joined today by Dr. Daryl Ray. And we are going to talk about sex and God. And he's just looking at me like, let's do it.
Let's go for it.
Let's do it. And I want to jump right in. First of all, I'd like to give our listeners a little bit of background. If you've never heard of Dr. Ray, we are going to tell you all about him very quickly. He is the author of two books, the first being The God Virus, How Religion Infects Our Lives and Culture, and the book Sex and God, which is his most recent book, Sex and God, How Religion Distorts Sexuality. And that's what we're going to be talking about today. And, of course, he's a renowned speaker. I have watched YouTube videos about him. He was down in – you appear in Austin, Texas, on their community program, their television community program.
Right, right. The Atheist Experience.
The Atheist Experience.
I've been on there three times.
Yeah. I watched an episode, and I thought, this is amazing stuff.
Yeah, it's cool. It's a cool show.
It is real.
Delahunty is a great co-host. He's amazing.
He has a great sense of humor. He's like, he's pointing at the bottom of the screen saying, and my name is misspelled here. And so let me take a look here. There are so many things that we could talk about when it comes to sex and religion. But let me jump right in with, when did religion start meddling into the sex lives of humanity?
It actually predates religion itself, as we know it in the Western world. I think it really, religion and sexuality started to come together when patriarchal religions started forming up. But they were really created even earlier with the beginning of agriculture. You know, in order to have an agricultural society, it's very different than a hunter-gatherer society. Hunter-gatherers are not nearly as intrusive about sexuality into their members. In fact, there's, you know, some hunter-gatherer societies that are very sex-positive, and we know this from thousands of years in the past, and we know from current research. But the minute you start owning property, you then have to make sure that the person, your wife, is controlled, because you got to control the children from that wife. You got to control all the animals. You got to control the labor. There's so many things that have to be controlled in a patriarchal, in an agricultural society. Not necessarily patriarchal, but agricultural society. It real quickly starts putting the controls on, especially women, females. If I'm a father of a female, I need to make sure she marries the proper person within the community so that, you know, we'll conserve the property and conserve the animals, conserve the reputation, all that sort of stuff. So it really predates religion in some ways, but it's hard to say. You know, we don't have a time machine. We can't go back and say, okay, when did religion and patriarchal society and agriculture, when did this all come together? We can just look at the archaeology, and there's a lot of evidence, a ton of evidence for it. But what we experience today is the result of a revolution that probably took place somewhere around 3,000 years ago, when agriculture and religion really start getting together and creating a strong patriarchal societies. Greece was a very strong was a patriarchal society, as was Rome later, and then, you know, the religions themselves become very strong within those. So we end up with Judaism, we end up with Islam, we end up with Christianity, all extremely strongly patriarchal. And whenever you have that, it means the number one priority is controlling the women. And that leads to other things that I wanted to talk about today, and that is, how does it affect men? We see this a lot in our society. We see the shaming of women. You know, we see this woman that was beaten to death because she was because she shamed the community by being raped in Pakistan. I mean, that makes absolutely no sense to us today, but it makes a lot of sense to them in their culture. And if you understand what's going on there, you realize that that men are programmed to control women. And if women accuse men of something like rape, then they are trying to shame men. Well, men will respond to that with violence. And we see that not just in Pakistan, not just in Afghanistan. We see it right here in the United States. And we can see that Mormons have a gay child in their home. 40% of all the homeless kids in Salt Lake City are gay children because they've been kicked out. because it's a shame to the male-dominated structure of Mormonism to allow someone who's not doesn't follow the gender binary. If you don't do what you're supposed to do as a man, then you're out of our home, or as a girl either.
And they're basing that on either the Bible or the Book of Mormon.
Absolutely.
You know, they're using a reference book.
Yeah.
Base that.
Absolutely. But it's not just the Book of Mormon. It's not just the Bible. It's any patriarchal religion. So it could be the Quran. It could be Hinduism. Hinduism is very patriarchal. Don't let anybody fool you. Yeah, they may have had some sex-positive ideas 1,000 years ago or so, but today the 154th worst country on the planet to be a female is India. Hinduism persecutes women. You know, we read about women being raped on buses and stuff. But what I'm trying to do is draw a line between the violence we see, and especially sexual violence in many cultures, and the programming of men and shaming of men. I see us talking a lot about shaming of women. And I think we can't really understand female shame until we understand male shame. I think they're two sides of the same coin. And once we understand that, then it explains a lot and gives us some handles to start educating and changing behavior, challenging behavior. I mean, when I was a kid, I remember being programmed in male shame. In the church I went to, if you can't control your women, you're not a good Christian. A good Christian man runs the household. Man is the head of the household. You know, we get these messages, and if you're not controlling your daughters, making them dress right, if you're not controlling your wife, making her behave properly in church, you know, Paul says in, I believe it's the Book of Timothy, I can't remember, a woman should be silent in church. You know, all these things are programmed into people very early on, especially in patriarchal religions.
Do you see a backtracking toward what I'll call the 1950s America? I feel in the media and in the political arena right now, there is this movement, of course, the Tea Party movement, which would be rolling back women's rights, rolling back women's roles in society, them playing a significant role. Where in that do you see – do you also see a rollback of sex roles also?
Well, the gender binary was incredibly strong in the 1950s. You know, man was a man, a woman was a woman, all the movies, you know, all this stuff. You got people like Rock Hudson, who's actually gay, but he wouldn't have dared come out as gay back in the 50s or even the 60s. Mm-hmm. So when that gender – you know, if I look at a video of a Tea Party thing or whatever – most of those people grew up in the 50s or 60s, so they grew up in that time period. When people are under a lot of tumult socially, they oftentimes try to create a perfect society or recall a perfect time in their lives and in their society. Well, the perfect time in the average Tea Party's life was in 1956 when they were, you know, the genders were knew what the genders were, the races were separated, there was no integration of schools, you know, and all these things that were very strongly patriarchal were placed in our society, and Billy Graham was out there preaching and getting revivals going, and, you know, there's a lot of fundamentalist religious roots started in the 1950s and 60s. And of course, you had things like the John Birch Society was incredibly strong back then. And it too is a very oppressive patriarchal ideology, if you will. So, yeah, I see there's a rollback. Every group fantasizes about – every ideological group fantasizes about a perfect time and place in their history. And you see that. You see it in almost all religions. Islam, the perfect time for Islam was back in the 900s or something like that. The perfect time in Christianity was, you know, the first 100 years of Christianity. And they try to bring these ideas up of there was a perfect time. Well, they're myths. There was no such thing as a perfect time in any of these religions or in any culture. They're always evolving, they're always changing.
And to say to roll back to a fundamentalist standpoint on that would be awfully difficult, because you'd have to pick and choose your fundamentalism if you were to use the Bible as your guide. For example, the Christian Bible, there are passages that speak of women as property, of what happens to a woman who or a person who commits adultery. But those things aren't brought to light in this situation. But
no, but there was clear double standard in the 50s. Women who got divorced were seen as less, and men who got divorced were not seen, you know, weren't put down as much. There was clear double standards. There was persecution of gays. I mean, there's so many things that were happening back then as a result of that religious interpretation. And, yeah, they're very selective. Every religion is very selective. No matter what their holy scripture is, they pick the parts they like. They don't pick the parts they don't like. And then every generation has its favorite parts. I mean, if you look pre-Civil War, the whole South and much of the North was using biblical phrases that endorsed slavery. And so slavery is a good thing. Slavery is not – St. Paul endorsed it, said slaves should obey your masters. Well, you don't see that for you don't see the Southern Baptist Church doing that today, but many people don't realize the Southern Baptist Church was built on slavery, and it didn't disavow its own charter on slavery until I think it was 1979. The same thing was true of the Mormon Church. The Mormon Church was based on things like polygamy, and they didn't disavow it until decades after they were supposed to have disavowed. And we could point to many things like race in the Mormon Church. 79 is when they first allowed black men to be priests. Women still can't be priests in the Mormon Church. So they're always evolving. They're always picking and choosing their scriptures. Yeah.
So I had heard a phrase one time that says, when you control sex, you control the population.
Absolutely, yeah.
And I was and one of your projects is called the Therapist Project.
Yeah.
And at seculartherapy.org, I found that very fascinating. And so not yet getting into the therapy side of things, what in an ideal world, what would you consider the natural sexual expression, sexual pattern for a male if you could take away the patriarchal structure, how would this look?
Well, actually, that's part of the reason I wrote Sex and God. I wanted to. Nobody had ever written a book that put religion and sex together. Nobody, except the Christians. Of course, there's Christian books on sexuality, and there's Mormon and Muslim books, but none of them looked at the science. You know, they're looking at the ideology is what they're looking at. And when I did my research, I looked. No one has ever written about what is the impact of religious belief on human sexuality. I started doing my research and really lots of interviews, and I've been a therapist off and on for many, many decades now. I realized there are some really important things to think about here. And science tells us that sexuality is a continuum. I mentioned the word of the gender binary earlier. Well, that's a cultural myth. It's a Western cultural myth. But, I mean, other cultures have it as well, but it's a myth. Because there's gradations of maleness and gradations of femaleness, and you know there's to say you're male and you're female is to put a cultural construct on some genes that happen to be in your system, and that creates other problems because then it forces people to behave in ways that genetically they may not be predisposed to. So what I try to talk about and try to talk about in Sex and God is how much there's three components to your sexuality, and these kind of lay on top of each other. The first is genetics, and that's obvious, you know, it's a bunch of genes and chromosomes. But laid on top of that is the epigenetics, and most people don't know what epigenetics are, but they happen when you're still in the womb, but after the genes have already started working. For example, if a mother smokes or a mother drinks, or if there's too much testosterone in the womb, those things can change the way the fetus develops. And there's other things like what number of male child were you in the womb? I mean, there's evidence that the farther along you are in the birth order as males, the more likely you are to be gay if you're male. So, I mean, there's just lots of stuff going on there. And then there's a third level of map, and I call these maps, sexual maps, the genetic, the epigenetic, and then the cultural. The culture comes along and says, we don't really care what your genetic and your epigenetic maps are. We're going to impose this artificial map on top of you. And it would be kind of like saying, let's take the map of Rome in the year 100 and impose it over modern culture today. And could we, if we could, if we had a system, map system of Rome in the 100s, and we're trying to navigate our way around Italy, we're probably going to get lost a lot because the map has changed a hell of a lot. Cultural maps are constantly changing. But the genetic and the epigenetic maps aren't changing near as fast, if at all, in many cases. So the culture is constantly trying to force people into behavioral patterns that the genetics and the epigenetics don't support. And so you get this conflict in people. Now, somebody's born transgendered, or somebody's born gay, or somebody's born very straight. I mean, it doesn't matter. They've got feelings inside that are generated by the genetics and the epigenetics. Culture can only make that worse. It can't. And that's what it oftentimes does, and especially a gender binary culture that says patriarchy's right, males have to be males, females have to be females. Well, what if a male doesn't feel inside like a male?
Throwing in transgender.
Yeah, yeah. So if you've got these feelings inside yourself, and the culture's saying you can't, that it invalidates you. It says you cannot act like that because your genes, because you don't look like that. You know, you look like a man, you can't act like a woman, or vice versa, or any other combination. So what I try to show in Sex and God is that virtually every combination is right. There's no wrong combination. They're all out there. Some combinations are more common than other combinations, but there's no wrong combinations out there. So let's start learning how to understand these, the genetic and epigenetic, and then let's create a culture that's open and accepting of all these different combinations. Let people define themselves. Let's not define them for them. That's what I really want to try to do in writing the book.
And if we were to go back to looking at previous societies, going back in time, one society that a lot of people like to look back to is the Roman society, and how young men were raised in the Roman times versus how young men are raised today.
Uh-huh.
And it was homosexuality was more, it didn't have a definition.
Right, right.
That wasn't in the vernacular at the time. Right. Young men were raised and were under the command of an older man, and of course, it was kind of a warrior society.
Well, wait. I think you're actually referring to Greek.
Yes.
Rome didn't do that. Greece did. Although homosexuality was loosely allowed in Rome, it was much more institutionalized in Greek warrior society.
So yeah. Comparing that to how one would raise a child today,
mm-hmm.
and of course, then fitting religion into this equation as well. How would one, you have a child, and actually let me ask you this question. Do you actually practice a religion yourself?
No, I'm an atheist.
You're an atheist, okay.
Although I do have a degree, and at one time I thought I was going to be a minister, so I've got a degree from seminary.
So you're
I have a master's degree. And
a theological atheist.
Yeah. I'd say I'm a Quaker atheist, actually. But
perfect. Yeah. And so how would you say for someone who's wanting to raise children in this society? My brother has small children, and it's a challenge with all of the things that are put forth, the male expectations.
Right, yeah.
How does one stop the expectations and then draw a new, like what you were just mentioning
right,
a moment ago?
Yeah.
How does one start with a fresh slate? And of course, it's very difficult in society because they're going to be influenced no matter what by television, by their peers growing up. But in the family, in the home, how could a male be raised?
Well, I think it's good for you as the parent to be aware of your own prejudices, biases, cultural inclinations already, and so maybe you see your 2-year-old child wanting to try lipstick, whether male or female. What's your response to that? And many males would say, "Wow, I'm not going to let my 2-year-old son try lipstick." Well, that's your response. That's your cultural response to that. Maybe a good thing to do at that point in time is to look inside yourself and say, wait a minute, why have I had such a visceral response to my 2-year-old putting on his mom's lipstick? And maybe you could talk to your spouse about about that. I'm really feeling upset or nervous about that. Let's talk about it openly and understand what that means. Because the world doesn't come to an end because a two-year-old tries lipstick. And it doesn't mean that two-year-old has made his choices or is destined to one way or the other. It just means he wants to try a cultural artifact that's in his environment. You're the one that's setting the expectations by your reactions to it. I saw something the other day of a boy that was beaten by his parents because he tried on pink shoes. 6 or 7-year-old boy tries on pink shoes, and his parents beat him mercilessly. And this is just absurd. Let children be who they are. Let them experiment who they are. But then you have to sit down and you have to teach the children. You have to talk openly. If that child says, I want to wear pink shoes to school, well, then maybe you better talk to him about, okay, let's think about what that might be. The other children, I'm not saying you need to kowtow to the stupid cultural ideas of the kids at school, but let's face it, there are going to be stupid cultural ideas at school, and it might get you hurt, and let's just talk about that. And then we make our choices openly, and maybe we can't solve this in this generation, but at least we're talking about it. At least we're not raising our kids to hate other children who might want to wear pink shoes, whether they're male or female. So that's sermon number 302.
A lot of gay and lesbian people, transgender, bisexual, are we were joking out in the green room before the show about being recovering, right. Being a recovering Catholic.
You know, I am the founder of Recovering from Religion.
Yeah?
Yeah, I founded it. And back in 2009, we have hundreds of meetings all over the United States. They meet like AA meetings, people who are getting out of religion. Our motto is, thousands of groups will get you into religion. We're the only one that will help you out.
And because religion is such a pervasive and strong force to untie oneself from it. And in just how does – let's say one lives in a very fundamentalist family and they're – in the closet, they don't feel like they can come out to their family, but they're just they've moved on. They're out there. How do they get that religion? And I know this is a very simple question with a very complex answer, but how do they begin to untie themselves from a religious ideal?
Well, I actually addressed that in my previous book, The God Virus. I talk about religious infection, and you get infected with religious ideas before your rational immune system is capable of analyzing those ideas. I mean, if a Jehovah's Witness comes to your door today and knocks on it, they're trying to sneeze on you. They're trying to infect you with Jehovah's Witnesses' craziness ideas. So, but it almost never happens. Jehovah's Witnesses rarely, absolutely rarely ever convert anybody. It's just very difficult to convert an adult whose rational immune system has all the defenses against it. But when you're 3, 4, 5 years old and your parents are teaching you that you better love this deity out there or he's going to kill you, you know, he loves you a lot, but he's going to send you to hell forever if you don't love him back unconditionally. Well, those are crazy ideas. They're crazy ideas to an adult. They're not crazy ideas to a 4-year-old. They have no frame of reference except all these big, giant adults around them who are powerful, who are dangerous maybe in some cases, who could be violent, are saying you better do this. Well, heck yeah. If I'm going to survive, I better say, yes, Mom, yes, Grandma, yes, Grandpa. I was raised in that kind of environment with a grandma that thought, I call her Granny, she thought the King James Version was written by Jesus Christ. I mean, that's how fundamentalist she was. And she'd slap you upside the head if you didn't pay proper respect to her Jesus or whatever. So all I'm saying is, as an adult, you are infected with ideas. But you're infected ideas before you knew how to rationally critique those ideas. So now as an adult, you can start going back and reanalyzing, what did I get infected with? Do I agree with it? Why wasn't I infected with Muslim ideas or Hindu ideas? Well, it's because you were born here at this time in this place. It's not because there's any magic to those ideas. It's because those are the ideas current in your culture. If you'd have been born in 1830, you'd have been infected with ideas about slavery and God. And you'd have thought God ordained slavery. And you'd have had ideas about color of skin, you know, being traced clear back to Ham and, you know, the early biblical times and all. Some people still believe that today for sure, but by and large, those ideas you weren't infected with. You're infected with new ones because culture is constantly changing and evolving. But you only get infected with the ideas in your culture. there's no Muslims around, you can't get infected with those ideas. Yeah, I don't know if that answers your question.
It does. It does. And actually, I could go on. I have many more questions, but we have run out of time. Dr. Daryl Ray, thank you for joining me. And, of course, you are the author of The God Virus, How Religion Infects Our Lives and Culture, and your newest book, Sex and God, How Religion Distorts Sexuality. Thank you for joining me today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Certainly.
Funding for KKFI provided by the Weekly Forum at All Souls UU Church. This Sunday, November the 10th, Andrea Roth, Executive Director of Missouri Health Advocacy Alliance, will talk about the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act. What are the rules? How can you help make this a success? All Souls UU Church is at 4501 Walnut Street, one block east of Main Street in Kansas City. More information is at allsoulskc.org. Listen to the All Souls Forum each Wednesday at 6 p.m. on 90.1 FM KKFI.
And we are back. And Brent Husher, the Brent Husher.
I thought there were two of us for a bit.
Well, there were. I was doing your stunt. Let me see if I can do your voice this morning.
I'd like to see that.
So you have the community calendar.
I sure do. And, you know, it's so fun talking about all the things going on. But I wanted to start with saying we never talk about the things that we've actually attended, and I wanted to spend just a few seconds saying this week I attended one of the events that we were talking about, and that was Laverne Cox, who spoke at UMKC this week. And for those of you out in Radioland, Laverne Cox is stars on the Netflix original Orange is the New Black. So she's a trans actress and activist. And I came because I loved the show, but I left thinking, man, this is a striking, impressive woman. Her presentation was awesome, and I just wanted to say that this is the kind of things that we get to talk about, and I was just happy to be there. And I was even moved to tears, along with several people in my row. So you may be able to find yourself in a moment of tears, which brings me to our first thing.
Oh, my goodness.
So the Vagina Monologue auditions are still going on. It continues today. November 9th, and that is at UMKC's Women's Center, Hague Hall 105. That will continue today through 3. Also on Tuesday, November 11th, I'm going to have to correct the calendar, from 4 to 6, the auditions will continue. Have you ever seen a production of the Vagina Monologues?
No, I have not.
Amazing, amazing stuff. So powerful. Also, I've been brought to tears by those. In fact, I heard the author speaking earlier this week on a program right here on KKFI. But anyway, moving on. Also on Tuesday, November 12th, is a screening of Ian Harvey's Superhero, which is part of the Best of the Fest screening, brought to you by the KC LGBT Film Festival, as well as UMKC's LGBTQIA programs and services, as well as UMKC's Department of Communication Studies, and UMKC's Department of Women and Gender Studies. Maybe that's a program and not a department. But anyway, lots of folks are making that happen.
they're okay.
So that's 7 p.m., and Ian Harvey is a fantastic comedian, a trans man. Margaret Cho actually sort of brought Ian to fame.
I have seen Ian. Funny.
I don't care how you identify yourself. The humor is so touching, and it's universal. You will get something from it.
Oh, yes, you will. Coming from us.
Right. Like, yeah, we're one part of the
professionals.
We're one part of the spectrum, but just trust us.
Trust us, yes.
It's good stuff.
Linda's laughing. We are professionals, Linda. Professional, no comment.
Well, how can you go wrong with a wonderful name like Brent? But moving along, speaking of Margaret Cho, also on Wednesday, November 13th, Margaret Cho is going to be here live at a benefit for the Lightning Lighthouse. And for those of you who listened to Woman's Song just before, we also heard from Shelley Wright in an interview that Linda Wilson did. And Shelley will be here, and I think it's just going to be a wonderful time, and it's a good cause. And so that's happening at the Folly Theater. I don't have the time. Oh, 8 p.m. Excuse me, folks. And the silent auction starts at 7. I should probably add that to the calendar, which, by the way, we talk about this calendar. Where do you find this besides here on the radio? Do you know?
On Facebook.
You can find it on our Facebook page.
Yes.
You can also find it at kkfi.org at the 10th Voice program page. So Well, we've gone from Ian Harvey to Margaret Cho. We've talked about the vagina monologues. Let's talk about beer. On Saturday, November 16th, Beer KC, a strong ale festival for AIDS Walk, will be happening at McCoy's. That starts at 1 p.m. I know you guys will be listening to us here on the radio as you go in and have your 80 robust brews from 35 craft breweries around the state. Again, that's a benefit for AIDS Walk. We could go on and on. I wanted to mention one thing that I haven't talked about on the calendar, but will be coming up in December, and I just added it for this week, and that is actually on Sunday, December 15th, at 4 p.m., the Kansas City Women's Chorus will present their I'll Be Home concert. That's also at the Folly Theater. That's all I have time for today, Pierce.
Brent, thank you very much. And please stay tuned for the national weekly GLBT news magazine, This Way Out, following our show. You may email your comments, questions, or story ideas to us at the10thvoice@kkfi.org. The news at the top of the hour was researched and produced by Sandra Mead. The 10th Voice Community Calendar and guest research were produced by Brent Husher and Sandra Mead. Sound engineering for today's broadcast of the 10th Voice was created by the illustrious and infamous Linda Wilson. She
illustrious.
Okay, continuing around, I had to stop myself there for just a moment. And, of course, I'm Pierce Patterson, and thank you for joining us today, and have a great rest of your weekend, and stay tuned next week for, that will be Elizabeth Anderson, who will have her show coming up at 1 o'clock next Saturday, her edition of The 10th Voice.